Hello and welcome to another episode of the Football Faithful Podcast. The battle at the top of the table continues with the race for the final two Champions League places as exciting as ever. There's all that and some Champions League chat as well, and joining me to go through all of that is Peter Henry. Hi, Peter.
How's it going, lads?
Not too bad. Colin Buick's there too. Hi, Colin.
Hi, lad.
And making his long-awaited return, it's Danny Ward. Hi, Danny.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Good. Right, let's start, as we always do then, with your football moments of the week. Peter, let's start with you.
Yeah, I was going to, through gritted teeth, give it to Mohamed Salah's heat-seeking missile of a finish, but I think Danny will probably wax lyrical about that in a couple of minutes. So there was one other moment that, like, I actually genuinely shocked me this weekend. It was after Kevin De Bruyne played one of his kind of trademark slide-rule passes through to Sterling in the Crystal Palace game, and Sterling rifled it into the roof of the net. I nearly fell off my chair when they said that was actually De Bruyne's first assist of the Premier League season. I couldn't believe it. Like, I know he's had injury problems this season, and he's been in and out of the team, but when you consider, like, a fella who got 16 assists, and, you know, had it not been, you know, was widely regarded to expected to win the Premier League Player of the Year trophy, except for Mo Salah's kind of blistering end to the season last year. It just shows kind of like the machine that Man City team is, that they've managed to do everything they're doing without him actually anywhere near full fitness or form. So I just couldn't believe it when I heard it that was actually his first assist of the season. Of course, he went on and got another one later in the game. But if they can get him back on top form, it'll have a big impact on everything they're trying to do, both in the Premier League, Champions League, and winning the FA Cup.
And of course, more on that as a bit later on in the show. Colin, what about yourself?
There were loads, actually. There was really meaningful with the impeccable moment of silence for Hillsborough, which was actually really moving to watch through TV, because it was the most silent minute silence I think I've ever heard. And then there was the trivial but very funny Ashley Barnes kissing Joe Bennett's nose twice. But my moment of the week is Mikel Antonio's post-match interview after West Ham lost to Manchester United at Old Trafford. Look it up if you can't find it. It's on BT Sport. Antonio came on, hit the crossbar, had an unbelievable save from De Gea from one of his headers. And it's just the most putting everything into perspective post-match interview. Highly recommend going to see it. Definitely my moment of the week.
Well, tell us, what happened for anyone who didn't see it?
He was basically, United had two penalties, and he had an easy kind of answer to give. The question was, were you robbed? And his answer was basically, look, like, everyone makes mistakes, I don't really care. It is what it is. I'm lucky to be a footballer. I just enjoyed it, to be honest. I nearly scored. It was great to nearly score at Old Trafford. It was very funny. And he said it all while laughing as well, even though his team just lost. And he had two very, very near misses too. But he found the whole thing really funny, which is very endearing. Definitely go watch it.
He's having a lovely time. And Danny, what about yourself? Your moment of the week?
Moment of the week for me, Sam. I definitely going to give it to Liverpool's captain, Jordan Henderson. He's had a great week. I'm kind of giving it to him for the week that he's had, more so than his floated little chip to the back post for Sadio Mane for the opener in the game yesterday. But he really has proved a lot of critics wrong, I think, in the last week, and people are starting to appreciate him for hopefully the captain and player I've thought he has been for a long, long time. So Jordan Henderson, chip ball to the back post is my moment of the week.
My own personal moment of the week was, kind of to do with the Liverpool game, which was when Salah scored that goal and it cuts back to studio. Everyone goes absolutely bananas mental at the goal, except for Shay Given, who's tucking into a Carvery. It's just absolutely brilliant and barely looks up to see what's going on, because whatever he's eating is just fucking
and he's
brilliant.
He's put on a few, hasn't he?
Well, he's just, you know, not to be distracted from that turkey and ham. He was having a great time. Anyway, let's stick with that game then. Liverpool 2, Chelsea 0. And Danny, I'll go to you because, well, the Football Faithful writers were making their predictions about the run-in. And earlier on in the season, you had said that there's no chance, no way that you'd ever say that Liverpool are going to win the league. After that result, maybe you changed your tune.
Yeah, believe it or not, I just said it to a mate of mine today that after yesterday, I feel less confident that Liverpool will win the league, because I did think, yes, I do. I thought yesterday was a pivotal day in the race for the Premier League, and I had earmarked, for me, Tottenham's running had kind of started, Man City's running started with the Champions League game against Tottenham. I knew all the games they'd played, the five or six previous in the league, that they were going to win them handy enough. Cardiff, Brighton, Watford. There wasn't a real spanner in any of the works, in any of those games for me. But once the Tottenham game in the Champions League started, they'd lost that. I thought, right, this is a really tricky game for them to go to Palace. And I watched the game and they absolutely bossed it from start to finish. There was a nervy 5 or 6 minutes, but it would have been one of the most unjust results in football history. They were really, really good, City. And I just, there's a bit of me, obviously, that thinks that, yeah, they play Tottenham, they go away to Man United. They're two really tough games. Will they get 6 points? Possibly not. They're way better than Tottenham. They're way better than Man United. And they're way better than Burnley, Leicester and Brighton. And if they really want to, and if they turn up, they can blow all those teams away. So, yeah, Liverpool have had a great season. They're playing as well as I can remember. You know, they're as strong as I can remember. But Man City are... they're a different beast in a way. And it's just up. I do think Liverpool will win their four games. And I just hope for a slip up from City. But at the moment, I don't really see it. I think City are that good. I think the games that they'd won previously, the 5 and 6 games that I talked about, the Watfords and all, they're winning them 2-0. But I think that was the manager saying, listen, once you get 2-0 up, let's just... they weren't beating teams 5 and 6, and people were maybe questioning, going, you know, have they got the hunger, the desire to go and score 6 and 7? I think they were being quite smart and just controlling games and conserving energy, because yesterday was a tough game for them and they went into the game and absolutely steamrolled City. So
I'm surprised. I mean, I would have thought, sure. I mean, obviously you want to be realistic and maybe you're just downplaying your chances so that you're not overly disappointed if City do go on and win it, but I got to think on Saturday you were going absolutely ballistic.
No, I do think Liverpool have a chance. City have a very tough run in, you know. I think all the teams they play can cause them problems. Maybe bar, I think if it gets to the last game and they have to beat Brighton to win the league, I think they go to Brighton and they win convincingly. You know, I think Leicester can cause them problems because Leicester on their day are a very good side. Yesterday, it was strange watching the game. You're going, this is a Premier League game, and the away side has the ball all the time. They're keeping it, they're moving it, they're moving players out of position. And then you look at Palace when they got the ball, they just kicked it. They were just kicking it away, giving it straight back to them. Man City are that good that I think they can do that to Man United. I think they can do it to Tottenham. I hope that they don't go and steamroll everyone. And there is a bit of me that would say that they won't win all five. But yeah, maybe I'm just protecting myself a little bit, Sam. You might be right. I'm just protecting myself from the hurt that might come with 97 points and one defeat, because that's possible for Liverpool.
Jesus, you know, would just be fucking just brutal.
It's not fair. Like, it's honestly, that's the way most Liverpool fans can look at it. And you'll get the odd idiot who'll say they bottled it because they drew two games against Leicester and West Ham, like, in January, you know what I mean? But that's how far back you'll have to go for Liverpool to see them having a bit of a wobble, you know, or drawing with United and Everton away from home. They're not bad results. And for me, they were never bad results going to your main rivals and drawing away. So I hope, it's more from hope. You hope that Tottenham get something. You hope United get something. But you wouldn't be putting 100 or 200 quid on either of those teams or Leicester or anyone beating City, because they are that good, you know?
It's funny, we're about 10 minutes into the episode and I can't believe I'm going to have to go to one of the two United boys to talk about how good Liverpool were in their win. Peter, it was a decent result. I mean, Chelsea actually weren't bad in that game, but going into this game, you'd have to imagine that, you know, well, not even imagine, the slip, the famous slip was all over the press. It was being replayed online everywhere. It was being replayed on Sky in the build-up into this game. And this result, I mean, it sort of just cast that into history. That's not relevant nearly anymore.
Yeah, no, Liverpool were good. And this is a weird situation where I'm actually the one saying Liverpool are going to win the league and Danny's there saying no, they're not. So this is all just a bit bizarre now. I might just give up. But, no, and it, like, I think Colm alluded to it earlier on as well. It wasn't just looking back at the weight of 5 years ago with the Gerrard slip against Chelsea. And Chelsea hadn't lost hadn't been beaten at Anfield since 2012, I think. But you also had the Hillsborough, the anniversary 30 years coming up. So like it was a very emotional day on Anfield. And, you know, there's been criticism kind of in the past that maybe the Anfield crowd and all have got a bit nervous when the emotion has been high. So I thought Liverpool looked a lot more honest from the get-go yesterday than they have in some previous games. They weren't necessarily cutting Chelsea to ribbons in the first half by any stretch, because I thought Chelsea actually set up quite well. And they kind of contained Liverpool for large parts and looked a little bit dangerous on the counter. So it was quite like, there wasn't loads of chances or whatever, but when there's something riding on the game as big as what it was yesterday, it was a really entertaining game to watch. And then I think I'd like to say Liverpool took it away from them very quickly by scoring, you know, two goals within 3 minutes. You know, the first one, it's a lovely ball over by Henderson, and it's a good finish by Mane. And I think that just came from a period of kind of really putting Chelsea under the cosh. And then Salah's, you know, an absolute worldie, which you kind of always get the feeling he was going to do something after being racially abused by Chelsea fans. It was good to see him and Sterling answer back their critics this weekend. So, and a brilliant goal. But it's funny because when you look at it, kind of you think, I don't think he takes that shot if there's nobody around him. I think the fact he thought he was about to be tackled by the oncoming Chelsea player, he just ran onto it and said, all I'm going to do here is just put my foot through the ball. And, you know, like I said in the intro, it's like a heat-seeking missile going into the top corner. Having said that, you kind of, as soon as the second goal went in, you thought, look, Chelsea aren't going to come back with this. They don't necessarily look like a team that, even though they've been playing well, they don't really believe in what they're doing for Sarri. A lot of the time. But geez, Hazard had a couple of chances within about 3 or 4 minutes. Liverpool lost their head for about 10 minutes, I thought, after they went 2-0 up. And then I think it was when Wijnaldum came back on, or they brought Wijnaldum on, and I thought he was the perfect sub at the time, because what Liverpool needed to do at that stage was just keep the ball and forget going after a third goal. Just take the sting out of Chelsea and not let them build up ahead of steam. And I think that's where Wijnaldum, you could see a couple of times,
He's the best at that, Peter, isn't he? Well, for me, he's brilliant at that. He's absolutely brilliant at that.
Forward, give it to him in a tight space, he'll keep it, and he'll just play other people in. So I thought that was good game management by Klopp, bringing him on at that stage. It would have been really interesting now if Hazard had put one of them chances away, especially the one that hit the post. And then the other one was a very good chance as well, that Alisson made the save, but he kind of should have been making the save anyway. Hazard, to be fair, missed two big chances, but I thought he just looked absolutely world-class for the entire game. He's some player. And I really feel that that's kind of, like, you look at Liverpool's rest of the games left. For some reason, I think I just have a feeling that Cardiff away is going to be one of their toughest games. If it's bad weather or whatever, Cardiff are just going to get stuck in.
The weather's always nice in Cardiff, to be honest.
Listen, Liverpool have the quality to beat Cardiff, of course they do, but for some reason I just feel that could be a banana skin, especially if Cardiff beat Brighton during the week or get a draw against them. So it could kind of be like the last chance saloon, for Cardiff. So it'll be a real cup tie for them. So I think that could be a potential banana skin. But honestly, I see Liverpool winning their four other games, and I think City will drop points against. They don't need to lose, City. They just need to draw against either City against Spurs or Man United. I think they'll drop points in one of them two games, and Liverpool will win all their remaining games. That's how I feel. I said it. We did a title prediction piece on the website where everybody on the pod, except you, Sam, because you're too lazy to reply to your emails.
I did it. Check your mails. I did it.
So I didn't get it anyway, but everybody gave their predictions, and I just kind of have a feeling now it's going to be Liverpool's. And it's a good point, I think, that Danny made, because as well, it feels like Liverpool have been in a title race since about November, whereas even watching the City game yesterday, never really got the feeling they were, I think it's because they always score so early, but it's like City have never been, there's not that intensity to City games that you see when Liverpool are playing as well. Maybe the coverage is different and it doesn't build you up to it, but it's been, look, I think at this stage, the pace the two teams are setting is just phenomenal. And they both deserve massive credit. As much as I like to pick Holes and Liverpool, they both deserve massive credit. It's been a great title race, and it's one that I think will unfortunately end up at Anfield.
Yeah, well, I actually had City down in my prediction that never got published, but the idea behind mine was just that, you know, they make the exceptional boring, and this has been an exceptional run in, and they'll win it now, and it'll be completely forgotten about. A couple of years' time, no one will think.
It will be. I think Colm said it in his, like, we're all building this up as like one of the biggest, the best title races ever. But if both teams win all their remaining games, it'll be like, bleh, that was boring.
It'd be unbelievable. Close to 100 points.
I think we need a slip from someone for that little bit of drama close to the end, whatever way it happens. You know, we do need that. Otherwise, you look at it and go, well, yeah, City won 19 of the last 20 league games, and Liverpool, I don't know, dropped like 7 points out of a possible 51 or something like that. Yeah, and it'd be a bit boring. There needs to be a twist, because there hasn't been a twist or a turn for a long, long time. It's just been two really good teams winning games. In a different style, I suppose. But yeah, I think you're right. It would be one of those seasons you look back and go, it was two really good sides, but yeah, never got too juicy. And you need something. There's a bit of drama that has to unfold. And I'm sure there will be. There has to be. It can't just be all this routine wins for City and Liverpool, you know, with their fight and desire and heart, winning their games. There has to be something happens. There has to be a referee decision, a goal disallowed, an offside goal, a sending off. There's got to be something. And if there's not, I couldn't give a shite if it ends up Liverpool winning the league and there's no drama whatsoever. I'll take every bit of it.
But if Liverpool win it, there will be drama. There'll be moments that you look back through the season, Salah's goal. You know, there'll be
his own goal in the last minute. Liverpool drawn 1-1 with Wolves, and Connor Cody heads the ball into his own goal at Anfield on the last day. That's what I know.
Yeah, perfect.
Money on that. A bit of praise then, Colm, for Jordan Henderson, actually. Impressive again. And, you know, we've been asking the Henderson question for a while now, but is the answer to that question actually just Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, the answer to the question is it's Jordan Henderson, yeah. What's the question?
Who is Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, he's there. Well, I mean, that's where he played with Sunderland, wasn't it? I mean, like, people forget that. He played, like, attacking right side. I've heard that he's... So, kind of, the idea of a season was at Old Trafford, wasn't he? He got taken off and kind of threw a little, you know, tiny strap of being taken off and kind of had a word with Klopp on the sideline and was left out of the team for a bit. And I think, you know, the general consensus was that Liverpool were better off without him. And then the last three of their most important games this season, he's been phenomenal, which started up with him coming on against Southampton. It was a great finish as well. And I think he played on the right side of the three when he came on that game, and then was brilliant against Porto, and in fairness, was absolutely excellent yesterday and didn't even play the whole game. So he's just a new lease of life. He's kind of taken on, like he is, and I mean this in the best way, a poor man Steven Gerrard when Steven Gerrard was at his best, which means he's still an excellent player. And it's, you know, people talked about Henderson replacing Gerrard just as Gerrard was coming to the end of his time at Liverpool, and no one really believed it. And now, for the first time ever in his Liverpool career, you can see it. He's obviously never going to be the same player as Gerrard, because nobody is, but he's very close to being that way. And, you know, if he is the guy to be the first person to lift the trophy at the end of this season, you couldn't hold it against him. Having said that, I still think it'll be Vincent Kompany doing that.
Is he not more the sort of Michael Carrick? You know, he's sort of brought in to replace Scholes. Not quite the same player, does a totally different job, but is still very impressive in what he does.
No, I suppose it's probably the lazy comparison with Gerrard all the time, in that, you know, he's, you know, Northern English as well, and he came in and, you know, he played midfield. But I do think he's quite similar to him, in that his preference to play is kind of box to box with an attack, with a slight eye towards attacking rather than defending, which is essentially Gerrard. I know that Gerrard's best time at Liverpool was when he wasn't playing centre mid. It was just off Torres or on the right hand side under Houllier. And with Henderson, it's probably not playing in a number six role as Klopp calls him, the last midfielder. But what he has is he has an attacking instinct with not much technical ability, but he's so hard working and he has so much desire to get where he needs to go to in important places, which is a sprinkle of...
He's Dirk Kuyt or...
Yeah. Exactly. Dirk Kuyt's a great comparison, actually. That's exactly what he is. And Kuyt was a brilliant player for Liverpool.
Yeah. They're industrious. Like, industrious is a horrible... It's a horrible word for a footballer.
Kind of damning with faint praise, really.
It's damning, but, you know, they get on the front foot. They try to make things happen. Even looking at him, his running style, I know Ferguson always bashed him once about it. He'll never make it for his gait and all that sort of stuff. But it's not the prettiest thing you've ever seen, him trying to get by someone and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But there's an effectiveness to what he does. And I've always said, I've always bashed on about the half an hour he came on against Southampton. Small things like that, and they don't get picked up on by a lot of fans. A lot of fans are people watching games, you know, who kind of from 20 yards, how's he missed that from 25 yards, you know what I mean? With a £71 million goalkeeper in nets, you know what I mean? I don't know, the mind boggles. But he came on against Southampton after 61 minutes, and he did nothing more than try and, when there was a throw in, try and take it quickly, closing down lads really quickly. Small little things like that actually you get people forget about the things that you get taught when you're playing football as a 6 and 7 year old, putting people under pressure, you know what I mean? Showing a bit of urgency, a little bit of fight. They're still really important traits in modern football. And he came on without making a really good pass until the header for the goal and his goal. He came on and made a massive difference just with a bit of urgency, and he put a rocket up the rest of them. And it does lift players. When you see that sort of energy, it gives you a lift. And that for me was a real captain's performance. And that's the sort of stuff he gives you. He's not going to give you the Gerrard lung busting or the 25-yard screamers, but he gives you something. And again, as Colm said, if he's lifting the Premier League title over his head, Gerrard will be taking the back seat. I'm telling you, that's how highly I'll raise him if that happens.
You could see when he was leaving the pitch yesterday, lads, you said there a rocket, Danny. You could see even the way he was geeing up his teammates when he went on. And, you know, I've often said that Liverpool will fall short because they don't have that title winning experience within their team. And I think it was Milner came on with him at Southampton as well.
Yeah.
Them two boys, Milner has the Premier League, but Henderson's been around the block now. He was there in 2013-14. He's played a lot of games for England. I think his experience and his drive and all will rub off on the other players. And it was really evident when he was coming on, the way he was coming off yesterday, how he was geeing up the players. He's Liverpool's leader. I don't think there's any... I think that's become crystal clear over the last few games.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Everyone was clamouring for Van Dijk, and myself included. Sometimes you go, you know, well, Van Dijk's the real captain, all that. He's not. Supposed to be behind the scenes, helping new players integrate, taking players out and their wives and all that sort of stuff. You know, he's meant to be a really nice lad. His best friend at the club is Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's 20. You know what I mean? I know that's strange. You know, he's 28 or 29. You know, but he doesn't just kind of stick to someone of his own age group like Lallana and kind of just cozy up to them. Supposedly he's very good at bringing everyone together, because I think he understands his limitations as a player, and he knows that he needs other strings to his bow. And there are probably things that we don't see as supporters watching, you know, a game for 90 minutes. He does things behind the scenes. And Klopp's not a stupid man. He can see what he's doing behind the scenes. And there's a reason that he's still the captain there of Liverpool.
I'd say make a great cup of tea.
Yeah.
What do, Danny, what do Liverpool fans make of Lallana? He's a strange one for me.
We don't really spend too much time thinking about him, to be honest. You know, he's played... What's he played? Has he played, you know, 4 or 5 games this season? Like, if you're to add up the minutes, has he played 400 minutes, maybe, give or take? He's behind, like, Fabinho's a starter. Fabinho's the only guaranteed starter. If Liverpool are in the Champions League final tomorrow, I'd say Fabinho plays number 6, and then depends who you're playing. But I think he might have. I think Klopp has maybe got a little bit lucky in stumbling on Henderson and Keita, because Henderson can drop in and give you, you know, kind of give you that help, or give Fabinho that help. But for me, Lallana is probably 6th on that list. I think I'll have Milner in there ahead of him. I'll have Wijnaldum in there, who I think Peter said it there. He just brings a little bit of calm. Depends what sort of game you're in. Depends the time of a game. But Lallana, for me, He's contributed a couple of moments when he's played, but I think I don't see him at Liverpool next year unless if he wants to play 400 or 500 minutes next year. I think a move, you know, to set back to Southampton or something like that wouldn't be a bad shout for him because he's still got plenty of talent. I just don't think that. I think Liverpool are moving to a different level, and I don't think Lallana will get to that level or has been at that level, to be honest.
Quick word on the Champions League. Danny, you got Porto on Wednesday going into that game with a 2-0 lead. You'd imagine you're going into a Champions League semi-final. Priority, you'd imagine, well, I imagine, is the league though, right?
You're too deep into the Champions League. People tell me that, like, yeah, but does anyone for a second think Liverpool are going to throw, let's say Liverpool get to a semi-final?
I absolutely don't, but pick one.
Not throw it, no. Oh, pick one. The Premier League all day long. If someone said to me now, it's guaranteed Liverpool win the Champions League, but they don't win the league, I'd say no, I wouldn't take it. Yeah. I wouldn't take it. That was a guarantee. If someone said it's a toss of a coin to win the league, which it kind of is, nearly a little bit more in City's favour, I'd still no. It's the league. It's as I've used the analogy before. The Premier League is my girlfriend that hasn't put out. You know what I mean? Honestly, she hasn't put out. I've been with her for 34 years now. She hasn't put out. We've had a little bit of fun, you know what I mean? A little bit of this, a little bit of that. But there's been no penetration. And until I get that, you know what I mean? She'll never be my wife. You know what I mean? So, no, that for me is the Premier League. For all Liverpool fans, the Premier League's where it's at.
Right, there's a title for the episode in there somewhere, I think.
Don't use
your sex tape, one or the other.
Just for the record, you can't use wife and penetrate.
Let's move on, shall we?
I'll explain to you later.
Let's move on. Right then, Peter, final word on Chelsea then, because they went into this game on a decent run of form, but that loss actually means that they're now counting on results if they want to finish in the Champions League places. Of course, they could still win the Europa League and get in that way, but it's they're a funny team, aren't they?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of... I thought Chelsea, that was a much improved away display when you consider like what happened at the Etihad and away to Bournemouth. And even, you know, their recent game against Cardiff, they looked terrible. They looked so easy to play against. But I thought they were pretty decent yesterday for large parts of the game. I know, he got a bit of stick for playing... Sarri got a bit of stick for playing Hazard up front. But, you know, they bet City with that formation and... I thought it kind of, they were probably saying, look, if we throw up Giroud or, you know, Higuain, who just doesn't look fit enough to be playing in the Premier League, I'm sorry, they actually looked worse when he came off, although they looked better when Hazard went out to the left. They would have been like lambs to the slaughter to Van Dijk. He would have just put them in his pocket if they went up against him. So he was probably looking to go up against him with a dribbler. And I'd say, you know, Virgil van Dijk would much prefer having a physical battle than Eden Hazard running at him. Jorginho just got pushed off the ball too many times yesterday. For me, that's still an issue, I think. But I thought Loftus-Cheek was impressive in parts. Hudson-Odoi, which, listen, it's not his fault. I said it a couple of weeks ago on the pod, lads, that I just think, like, I hear all the questions constantly, Sarri being hounded about Hudson-Odoi, and I feel sorry for them both because... Hudson-Odoi, that was he now has more Premier League starts than England caps after yesterday's game, right? That was his first time starting a big Premier League game up against Andy Robertson, one of the best left backs. He was poor. He was really poor. Didn't get a kick. But like the press have built this lad up to be like you're kind of expecting him to run the pitch every time he gets the ball. Like such is the hype around him, you know. And I don't think it's good for him for his development.
He's not English, is he?
Huh?
He's not English by any chance, is he?
Of course he is. They capped him already, which I just thought...
No, I'm taking the piss, of course.
But like, and why they felt the need to cap him when they already have players like playing week in, week out for the clubs, I just don't understand it. And I think that might actually be very harmful towards his career. I think with Chelsea in general, though, there's a lot going to ride on the game at Old Trafford, Sam. That's massive, you know? Although even if United and Chelsea draw that game, if United and Chelsea draw that game, it could just benefit Spurs and Arsenal. So, you know, obviously Arsenal are playing tonight. They're away form. We were on the pod the last time in terms of the race for the top four, and we were saying Arsenal might get cost, you know, their away form might cost them. And sure enough, they went and lost to Everton the following weekend. So if I'm to sum up about Chelsea, I would kind of think I rate their chances. Well, I rate them as a team. I see them playing a bit better than they did 3 or 4 weeks ago. I thought 3 or 4 weeks ago, I barely backed them up against anybody. They look so easy to play with. Fans against Sarri, players not really looking like they're buying into his methods. But I thought there was encouraging signs there yesterday, even though they lost. Although that could also be just a case that like big players decided to step up because they're playing in a televised game away at Anfield. You know what I mean? It mightn't actually be that they're really happy with Sarri's methods. So yeah, I think if I had pushed the shove, I don't think they'll make the top four because they just seem to be a little too easy to play against, even if they're encouraging signs. So yeah, big defeat for them, but they just came up against a better team in the end.
Well, still plenty to come on the show. We'll talk all about City and of course their back-to-back games against Spurs, which are coming up, and United, who haven't been great lately. A little bit on Arsenal too, but now I think it's time for round one of the quiz. We all set, lads?
Yeah, ready to go.
Usual drill. I'm going to name a whole load of teams that a player's played for, and you tell us who the player is by the teams that he's played for. Right, player number one began his career at Blackburn Rovers. Nobody? Played for them 136 times and then went to Birmingham City.
Peter.
Cullum. Peter was just ahead of you.
It's not him.
No,
I was going to say David Dunn, but it's
still you. It is David Dunn. Very good. Oh, you jabby
bastard. But he said it's not David Dunn. David Dunn.
Half a point. Right then. Player number two began his career at Bradford City.
Danny. Big fat Dean Windass.
Wasn't Dean Windass, no. Then he went to Coventry City.
Oh, he's a glad. He likes the glamour, this fella, anyway. Peter. Peter Beagrie.
No. Went from Coventry then to Liverpool.
Danny. David Speedy.
Not David Speedy, no.
Peter. David Wright, is it?
Not David Wright, no.
Danny. Burrows.
Who?
David Burrows.
No, not David Burrows, no. Did a short loan spell at the end of his time at Liverpool at Tranmere.
Peter. John Aldridge.
Not John Aldridge.
He came from Oxford.
And then went on to Sporting.
Danny. Not Sporting.
Sporting Lisbon, yeah.
No.
Nobody. And finished up his career after that at Sunderland. Played for them 48 times.
Danny.
It's not Jason McAteer, no?
It's not Jason McAteer, no.
He played Bolton, didn't he?
No, I know it was Bolton. I was just thinking it. Phil Babb.
It is Phil Babb.
Oh, no. Never said his name.
It's true. But you know what? I'll give you a half point each. Right then. We'll get one more in before we go to the break.
I did say his name, Peter. I said Phil Babb.
Your own name. Right. This player began his career at a club called Karlsruhe. Played for their second team 73 times. Then he played for their first team 128 times.
Peter. Jürgen
Klinsmann. No. And then he went on to his final club, for whom he played 429 times, Bayern Munich.
Danny. Oliver Kahn.
It is Oliver Kahn. Very good. Right then, let's crack on. I've got a couple more juicy ones before the end of the show. We'll talk about City then and kind of tie in Spurs, I think, on this one. We already kind of spoke a bit about City and their 3-1 win at Palace, but with Spurs coming up back-to-back, let's talk a bit about the Champions League then. Maybe, Colin, we'll start with you because they're 1-0 down going into this, which is an interesting, you know, they've had problems in the Champions League. They'd be, I guess, a bit concerned going into the second leg 1-0 down against a team like Spurs, but then it is a Harry Kane-less Spurs.
Yeah, but Spurs are often better without Kane, with Son comes alive. Having said that, I think City will win this. It'll be very tight, but I think City will come out on top. And then I can see City falling in the semi-final. Just don't think they're going to go all the way. I think Liverpool will get to the final again. I just have a feeling about them. And I don't know why about City. I just don't think they're going to do it. And I think for much as Danny there was saying that, you know, any day he'd take the league over the Champions League, I almost feel like it's the opposite with City now. Maybe not the fans, but certainly the club themselves and Pep hasn't won the Champions League since 2011. I think that his priority is the Champions League over the league. And I just don't think they're going to do it, but I do think they'll, overall, but I do think they'll beat Spurs by a goal overall.
That's an interesting point you made about Spurs being better without Kane, because I was actually thinking that over the weekend, because, you know, it allows, well, we've never seen Moura played like he did. I know it's against Huddersfield, who were down and pretty much out, but, you know, he was great. Son's always very good. I mean, excellent, and really, you know, comes alive, like, I think, when Kane is out. So do you really think they'll be possibly even more dangerous without him?
No, I mean, it's just a thought, because Son had a real purple patch the last time Kane had his ankle injury. But where they might fall short this time, Spurs, is that Dele Alli is a big doubt with his broken hand. And Harry Winks as well did his groin on Friday before the Huddersfield game. He got man of the match in the first leg. Harry Winks is a player no one really talks about that much, but he's so important to them with his passing. Bit like you were mentioning Carrick there, comparing him to Henderson earlier. I would say Winks is very similar to Carrick. And if they don't have him, they don't really have that kind of nuanced midfielder. So they'll probably have to go with Sissoko and Wanyama against City. And I could see with De Bruyne back in the team, I could see them being a bit too crafty for Spurs, especially with it being at the Etihad. And Spurs, they're so used to the new stadium now. Like, they've been their last three games. This will be their first trip away. So they won't have the raucous crowd behind them that they have for the last three games when they haven't conceded a goal. And so for those three players, I think Deddy will probably play, but Winks is very doubtful and Kane is definitely out. I still think Spurs will be a threat, and I think they'll score, but I think City will just have too much for them, but only just.
I'm backing Spurs, lads, to go through. I think they'll go through. Like you said, you see, I actually think, obviously, Spurs are a better team with Harry Kane, but you said it there, that they showed a stat of Son's stats of, you know, goals and assists. Goals, actually, since Harry Kane came back into the team, and he basically didn't score. And then when Kane went off injured the first leg, he stepped up and scored. But I actually think, in a way, Son and Lucas Moura will be a nightmare for Man City, because Pep's teams, in the Champions League especially, always leave space in behind. And I think Moura, after scoring a hat-trick, he'll be flying with confidence. The pace of them two boys, the rest of the team will just sit back and try and soak up pressure. And I really think they'll score. I think City will win the game, but Spurs will go through in on away goals. Like, I think if Spurs score first, it becomes, even if Spurs score one goal, it becomes really, really difficult for City. I think City are in a kind of tricky position. I think they'll have to win the game by two clear goals, which is agreeing with what you said, that they'll score. But I just really think that, I don't know what it is. Like Colin said there, the club, and I think the club do probably prefer to win the Champions League. But like, if you listen to Guardiola throughout the season, he has done nothing but try and basically tell people that City aren't good enough to win the Champions League. It's bizarre. You know, if most other managers did that, they'd be castigated. So, like, I just don't think City look right in Europe for whatever reason it is. Even their stadium doesn't generally fill out for European games. I don't know whether it will. It probably will for this one. But I really think this will be where they'll fall. And that could have ramifications on the title race, on the Premier League title race as well. But I just really fancy Spurs to nick this one on away goals.
Colin, I can't remember who you said you were going to have winning the title. Was it Liverpool or was it Chelsea? Or Liverpool or City, sorry.
Definitely not Chelsea, but I'd have Man City.
Okay, do you have them down for the quadruple then?
No, Watford will win the cup final.
Okay.
And honestly, I think that will happen. But
if that's the one that does the
let's hope that's the one they don't win. Yeah. But, no one gives a shit. They can have it.
Well, they will if they want to win the quadruple. Like, that'll be I was saying there, I don't think they're going to get past the semi final. Anyway, of the Champions League. But I think they'll win the league. I just don't think they're going to drop any points for the rest of the season. to be honest. I think they'll just beat Spurs this week. And then at the weekend, I think they'll beat them a little bit more comfortably. Because I think Spurs are knackered, to be honest. And then I think they'll beat United. And then after that, they're home and dry. And I think the semi-final then will catch up with them in the Champions League. But no, I think Liverpool will slip up. And the game I think they'll slip up in is away to Newcastle, second last game.
On Spurs, just another quick word on them, because two of you think that they'll get through in this and get through to the semi-final at least in the Champions League. Is that going to put any kind of spanner in their run in for the top four? Danny, go to you on that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've always been an advocate of Spurs finishing quite strongly. I know they had their blip just when Kane came back from his injury, but I'd kind of echo what Peter said. I don't think they're going to miss Harry Kane as much as some people think. I do think they're going to be playing on the counter-attack and pace. We all know that pace wins prizes when it comes to playing on the counter-attack, and I do think that you have to play Harry Kane if he's fit and available. That option has now been taken away from the manager, obviously, and now he gets to just have raw pace in Son and Lucas Moura. I don't think he'll be foolish enough to stick that lump Llorente up front just to slow Everton down. And I think that works in their advantage. I do think it works to their favour. And I'd be with Peter. I think they go through on away goals. It's tough to beat any English team. To know you have to beat an English team by two clear goals. I'd have Spurs as slight favourites for that. I'd still have Spurs for me are still the third best team in the league. And I don't think after the City game, I think their run in is, it's cushy enough.
Danny, 3 or 4 at home they have as well. Yeah, I think
it's cushy enough. You know, United have City and Chelsea. Chelsea obviously have United. I think Spurs will get. I think Spurs will make the top four, and then I think it's anyone's. I know as we're recording this, Arsenal have just gone 1-0 up. Against 10 men of Watford, which is a big result for Arsenal, because I thought it was a game they might struggle in. So it's gonna be really, really tight, but it's just not an area of the table I've any interest in at the moment.
I'm sure.
I'm sorry.
Well, Peter, I will go to you then, and we'll talk about United. They beat West Ham 2-1. Two penalties from Paul Pogba. They weren't great. They weren't great against. In fact, they haven't been great for a couple of games now.
Very much true. Very true. They put in a lot of effort against Barcelona. That can't be faulted. And they did make life difficult for Barca at times. But just a complete lack of composure and quality in the final third really told in that game. I felt it was a missed opportunity as well, because that's not the same Barcelona team that, you know, that was a few years ago. And even like you're looking at Suarez, he's a shadow of the player that was terrorizing Premier League defenses a few years back. So
foreshadows the size of him. Have you seen him?
I really thought we would a little bit more composure in front of goal, and a bit more. I thought Solskjaer got his tactics quite well in terms of the high press and all. They did cause problems, but it was just so one dimensional, constantly trying to cross into the box. When you have players like Rashford and then Martial and Lingard, come on. If you watch, like I know because I played football, when they jump for a header, it's just a token gesture. They've no more fucking interest in winning the ball. They're just. Martial especially, he's just jumping to make it look like he's jumping for the ball. He's not trying to win the header or anything. So just constantly putting the ball down the right-hand side to Ashley Young, who had an absolute stinker, was just very one-dimensional. And then even the couple of chances Rashford had won, he just completely no composure at all. I think it's a straight, you know, it's I don't want to start like harking on that I said we shouldn't have hired Solskjaer and all, because he has done a great job and all, but like if you look at it now, lads, I don't know. It's like there's a few ways to look at it. You could be very worried, because we've lost 4 of 6. The two games we won against Watford and West Ham. Watford deserved to get a draw. West Ham probably deserved to beat us. That's, you know, you're not going to play well in every single game. And I always said that during the Mourinho era. But like, even I was watching Match of the Day last night, they were doing Goal of the Month and they had the goals from the Southampton game. We didn't really deserve to win that game either. Like, you know, strangely, most of the big performances have come away from home when we've played on the counter-attack. We've struggled when we're expected to be the protagonist in the game. We're really in the game tomorrow because it's kind of like if we get a goal, if we score an early goal like we did in Paris, then it's game on. And I think with the pace we have in the team, we could maybe cause Barcelona problems. Look, they could go 2-0 up after 10 minutes and just keep the ball off us for the rest of the game, which is quite possible as well. But
yeah, they weren't great in that first leg either. I remember watching it thinking, Jesus, Liverpool would be quite happy to get either of these, to be honest.
I think Liverpool would beat them easily enough if they get them, if I'm honest. But, you know, even with the race for the Type 4, we have Everton away. They'll be looking to bounce back from the Fulham result, and they had been good at home for a couple, you know, bet Chelsea and Arsenal. Then we have City and Chelsea coming up as well. So we've a tough run in, and we're not in good form. There's no way to dress it up. So if I was taking my allegiance out, I would absolutely say that Man United aren't going to be making the top four this season. But I'm going to live in hope that we will. But it, you know, based on the most recent body of work, the last six games, it's not been great. And we played well for 20 minutes against, and maybe 20 minutes first half, 15 minutes in the second half against Wolves. But apart from that, performances, maybe Arsenal away, but performances haven't been great as of late. So I'd say we could really do with even running Barcelona close tomorrow, just to kind of get a bit of belief back into the squad. And like, I don't think it's any secret. There's a lot going on there with contracts at the club at the moment. There's going to be a big overhaul. It's strange, even though Solskjaer has become the full-time manager, that's just opened more questions up now about who he's going to get rid of and who he's going to keep, kind of thing. So it's not great at the moment. I don't know how the other United fans feel, but you know, we're not really playing well, and all the issues that were there before, you know, in the before Solskjaer came in, they're just starting to come back up, and the bounce is over, you know. So we still, like, we're so far off in terms of that squad being able to challenge the likes of City and Liverpool. Now, if we get lucky tomorrow, we go into the Champions League semi final, nothing to lose. The whole season could take a totally different gloss, and we'll get a real bump in confidence, and it might help us in the remaining games. But if tomorrow goes pear-shaped badly, then it's going to be a really, really tough end to the season, and it's going to be another summer of kind of chaos, I would imagine, because there's so many players coming to the end, you know, with contract issues. They want to spend loads of money. Everybody knows we have loads of money because Edward Ed lets everybody know. I think it could be a messy summer if the next couple of weeks don't go too well, lads, if I'm honest.
Colm, thoughts on that?
There's a lot of transition this summer. There's a lot of players want to leave, and they should leave if they want to go. It all kind of boils down to Alexis Sanchez's contract, really, and our better players want to be on par with him, or well, at least on par and probably better. And deservedly so. So David De Gea being the first one, could see him going this summer. I hope Pogba goes, that we just cut our ties there. I know he scored. I know he's a match winner on Saturday, but I do think he should go and we should just start from afresh there. It's a really interesting one because this was all going so well when it was temporary, and now we've made it permanent, and now suddenly there's loads of doubts. And we're kind of back to the uncertainty again that was just before Christmas. So,
Colm, can I ask you this? Sorry, Colm. I've thought this for a while. Well, since United have had their slump, and it's the correlation between him being given permanent manager and United slump. For me, it's not a coincidence. And I just wonder, and I've been banging on about United behind the scenes, who's running the place, because they're really fucking it up for me. United were flying. They were absolutely flying. Players are playing for possibly to get this guy the job, or to impress a new manager if he comes in the summer. That was taken away once they gave the manager the job, once they gave Solskjaer the job. And just the United's tempo levels, everything just dropped. And it dropped really quickly. And it's just like, we don't have to impress this guy anymore. He's here for a few years, you know what I mean? We don't have to impress a potential new manager, you know, if we really want to stay. And for me, that's really fucked up United season, because they're just missing what they had there. Pogba was flying. He was scoring loads of goals. I know, again, Colm, I know you said he scored two goals the weekend. Penalties are penalties, you know what I mean? There's an intensity from United that just dropped off. And it was a longer bounce than I think most people expected. But once they gave Solskjaer the job, it just all went flat again. And I've actually, I'd say this on air, I want United to be ticking along nicely and in with a shout of top four and all that, because I've been looking at this Man United, Man City game as the big, big game this season, the biggest game of the season, and Liverpool aren't even playing it. It's the biggest game of the season for me. And I want United to be in a decent vein of form for that. But I don't know why they gave Solskjaer the job when they did. They should have just left it until the end of the season, and then you make your decision. Because United could realistically get knocked out tomorrow by Barcelona, finish sixth in the league, and now you're going, is that much of an improvement? You know what I mean?
I don't know if it needed to be an improvement by the end of this season. I think it was maybe we're a bit spoiled now that we're actually in a shout for the top four, because 2 months ago, none of us thought that they'd be in with a chance of that. You know what I mean? Or a chance of an ass's roar of a Champions League semi-final.
You were actually in pole position, you know, to possibly get third, you know, and then if it's not broken, don't fix it for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Solskjaer is the interim manager. Things are going quite well. Don't upset the apple cart. Leave it. You know what I mean? And they got excited and they brought it out. Like they made him a permanent manager at a strange time. There was just no need to do it. Just leave it. Everything's going along really nicely. And it's very rare that, you know, you'll make a manager, your permanent manager, after a certain amount of games and you get another bounce off it. You had your bounce. Things are ticking along nicely. Let them tick along nicely. Then you reassess in the summer. You know, and you would give the job to Solskjaer. But now, I'd say a lot of Man United fans are already starting to go, oh, fuck. He's our manager for the next 3 years. I don't know. Like, I lasted the 3 years, you're all Man United fans. Do you not now think, oh, shite? You know what I mean? Let's just see. We should have maybe waited to see how it played out.
I want to see improvements. I want to see a team with a plan and a team that's going in a direction forward. You know what I mean? Like, I think I mentioned this maybe last week or the week before. You look at Liverpool when Klopp came in, there was a change that he made to the team, the way they played, and it's been incremental, and you've seen season after season, he's sort of tweaked, he's seen things that have been wrong, he's addressed them and moved forward, and now you're seeing the fruits of that with a proper title challenge. I'd be quite happy to see that.
Klopp's been very lucky, though. There's not many clubs that are actually prepared to wait and give manager's time.
But I think United fans would be happy to wait as long as it was moving forward.
But do you really think that Solskjaer has a plan and a style that is going to improve United? I don't know. He went in, put the arm around the shoulder, told everyone they're the best player in the world, and he got the bounce from that. There's only so long that lasts. You know, players will kind of go, all right, okay, oh, this is brilliant. Yeah, the old manager said I was shite and I wasn't allowed to do this. This lad's going, yeah, you can do whatever you want, mate. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, he's brought chips back, maybe, has it?
After a while, it just, that wears off. And I don't know if Solskjaer has got the big, big plan. You know, Klopp had a plan, and obviously, you're starting to see the fruits of his labour now. But he was given the time to do it, and he actually came with a plan. And he wasn't under too much pressure because he knew, I'm going to be able to see this plan through. For me, I don't see Solskjaer at United this time next year.
Peter?
Really don't.
Listen, the thing, hindsight is great now, and I understand why he was given the job, and I appreciate what he's done. I think myself and Colm we never really strayed too far from the fact that we thought United probably should have went after Pochettino. It was the hard decision. The hardest thing Man United's board had to do was ignore the emotion and the hysteria and look at it in the long term. But they didn't. They buckled under public pressure and they gave it to Solskjaer. Now, I like Solskjaer and I hope he does well, but I have to look at it in the cold light of day as well. How does a manager go from managing fucking in the Norwegian league to taking over Manchester United? It's just unheard of. And I don't think it's just unheard of. When I watch him on the bench, it's like he's not really in control. Everything's a discussion with three or four coaches. It's like he's not even coming to the decision. Like three of them have a chat and then he runs out. And I'm not saying managers shouldn't look for feedback after coaches, but it's like he's not making the decisions himself, and that worries me. Is he strong enough?
He's not a big enough personality to be the head honcho.
I don't think so. That's what I don't think. I think he'd be a great coach at Man United. I don't think he should be the main man. Look, everybody got caught up in it, and it is falling back now. There's absolutely... Everybody always said United will regress to the mean, and I think that's happened now, unfortunately. It doesn't change anything. They still needed a massive overhaul there. There's a lot of players there aren't actually as good as... You know, people were saying they're going to be amazing, all the rest of it. And they did it for a while, but I don't think they're going to be able to do it consistently. So there's still wholesale changes left. Listen, I hope I just have doubts about Solskjaer, and I've always had them. I hope he proves me wrong, but it will find out very, very soon, because there's no margin left for error in the race for the top four and the Champions League, obviously, tomorrow. So I'd say when we come on the pod next week, we'll know a lot more about how things are going to go. But I just worry that United didn't, that the board didn't have the balls to make the tough decision and get a proven coach in. And I find it a bit worrying, because this is the main thing for me, lads. Under Mourinho, everyone was, oh, but what are United? They don't even have a style of play anymore. You can't look at them like you look at Man City or Liverpool and say, oh, that's a Pep team or that's a Klopp team. Like, Solskjaer's been in there for whatever, close to 20 games now. Like, okay, he puts his fullbacks further up, which I'm fucking sick of hearing about. It's not a tactical, he's not a tactical genius for pushing his fullbacks further up. If I look at Man United, you say, what's their style of play under Solskjaer? They don't have one, because they've been shit at Old Trafford since he came in. The only thing I could say is they play on the counter-attack away from home. That's the only thing I could get close to defining a Solskjaer team as. I don't know about you, Colin. What can you see a style of play United are playing since Solskjaer came in? Or is it just that they play well away from home? That they counter-attack well away from home?
Yeah, his biggest strength was that we had lost all hope as fans. And then he came in and then we beat Cardiff 4-0 in our first game. And he just, it's not anything that he did tactically, really. Like, his first big test is away to Spurs. He won 1-0 in a game that De Gea was unbelievable in. What he's done is the players have relaxed, and basically, like, in a football sense anyway, it was like an oppressive regime at Mourinho. Like, they didn't feel like they could do anything. Now, the players were, in my opinion, and I'm sure your opinion be too, like, had a massive portion of blame under Mourinho as well. But Mourinho was the chief instigator of everything bad that happened to United. Solskjaer came in and just lifted the mood. And to the modern-day player, that's a huge thing. That's almost as important as tactics, because players have so much power now. So Solskjaer gave them the freedom of the city to do what they wanted to do, really. Then, as Danny says, he got the job permanently, and then everyone, consciously or otherwise, subconsciously, relaxed a little. Tactically, like you're asking me there, Pete, I don't think he's done anything in particular. He sets us up half decently. Well, he's got Smalling looking a bit more solid. Smalling and Lindelof look like an okay partnership. They're about a sixth in the league partnership, which is probably, at the moment looking like where we're going to end up, although I do think we will actually somehow sneak top four. I think he's been okay away from home. I think away to PSG, we got very lucky, but it was a famous night. But at home against the weaker sides, there's really not much difference between us now and what we were like under Mourinho. So you can't say he's improved us too much tactically. What he has given us is that feel-good factor and the bounce and allowing the players to express themselves. But what he does do with all these poor results lately is it actually, for me, shines a light back onto the players.
Yeah,
100%. Like, they're just not really that good enough. Because Solskjaer, we all know how limited Solskjaer as a coach is. Solskjaer knows how limited he is as a coach. So what he's done is, like, you're all great players, go out and show me how great you are. And we're not really doing that. Because for years now, like 6 years, post-Fergie, We just haven't been a great team. And this is the reality of where we are now. And those first 3 or 4 months under Solskjaer was an anomaly. Like, they were the best 3 or 4 months since Fergie left. And now he's gone permanent. And we're going back to Van Gaal, Mourinho and Moyes style football. It's a strange thing, but it's like a disease has gotten into the club. And this is where we are now. Who knows when we're going to be challenging for the league again, you know? But it struck me. I said it from day one. Roberto Di Matteo, this is what it's like. Di Matteo won the Champions League with Chelsea. They gave him the permanent job. He was out by October, I think. They got hammered by Juventus in the Champions League. Same with Danny. He says there he can't see Solskjaer there this time next year. I would go along with that as well. Where we go next after Solskjaer, I'm already thinking that, and I don't know, to be honest. So we haven't improved tactically, and it looks like we're going to overhaul the squad in the summer, and who knows where that will leave us. Suddenly the Champions League is vitally important to us because top four doesn't look so solid anymore, do you know?
Yeah, and then, the problem then is it's another, we've such a mishmash of players.
That's it.
The problem is then, does the next coach after, Pochettino will probably still be at Spurs, they'll probably go for him then, but...
You know what? I never really saw the point in a director of football. I thought it was kind of a position that undermined the manager. Because, again, we're spoiled as United fans because we lived under Fergie for 27 years. But I think now, I think there is a big, big plus in having a director of football, because what's happening now the last 6 years at United is that you have 3 different managers all buying their own style of players in Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho. Now we're on to our 4th manager. Solskjaer's going to buy his own players unless we don't get a director of football. And like you said there, it's a mishmash of players. The squad is completely imbalanced. And there's only a handful of players that I think are worth keeping, to be honest. And I would be happy to see the rest of them go. But the reality is, we're only going to change the squad by 2 or 3 players each side, either in and out. And I don't feel like next season's going to be that different, you know?
I think our end of the season and pre-season kind of preamble for next year is going to be a very interesting podcast. Anyway, we'll finish up in just a second. First, it's time for round 2 of the quiz. So, number 4, I think it is, began his career. I'll zip through some of these because he didn't play for some of the first ones. Began his career at Asante Kotoko. And then he played for, or at least was signed to, Cornerstones Kumasi for 2 years.
Peter? Nakamura, who used to play for Celtic.
No. And then he went to Okwawu United.
Peter. Shinji Kagawa.
No. And then he played for FC Saarbrücken.
Danny. I just wanted to get in there because Peter couldn't think of his name. FC Saarbrücken. What's his name? No, it's gone.
Peter. Okazaki off Leicester, is it?
Nope. Peter again.
I can't say his first name. Honda.
No, Kensuke Honda. No, not him. Went from Saarbrücken to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Peter. Son.
Nope. Went from Frankfurt then to Leeds United.
Danny.
Oh,
Lucas Radebe.
It's not Lucas Radebe.
Peter. Tony DiRigo.
Not Tony DiRigo, no.
Tony DiRigo.
Cullum. Ia Boa.
Steaming in there. It's Tony Yeboah. Very good.
Tony Yeboah.
Went to Hamburger.
Why we thought all those clubs were Japanese. They were African, were they?
Yeah, Ghanaian, yeah.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Yeah, good shout. How many points is that now? 2, is this, Cullum?
One.
Okay, so scores in the doors then, if you don't mind reminding me. Danny, you got 2, is it?
Yeah.
And 1 for the boys. Right then. This next player began his career at FC Twente.
Danny. Janssen?
Not Janssen, no. Went from Twente to Fulham.
Danny. Brian Ruiz.
Not Brian Ruiz, no.
Peter. Moussa Dembele.
Not Moussa Dembele, no. While at Fulham, he had loan spells at Leicester, Watford and NEC. Nobody?
No.
Then he was at a club called Roselaar. It's going to start getting worse now as I go down. So he was at Roselaar, then he went to Chicago Fire. Then he went
Is he Dutch?
He is not Dutch. Oh, he is Dutch, sorry, yeah. Well, he's not. He wasn't born there, but he's played for the Dutch national side. Played for Gabala, played for Mez, Sasher Me. Played for Barnet, weirdly, in the middle of all this, once.
Danny. No, just because I know there's an Edgar Davids and Barnett connection there, but no, it's not him, because no. I would have heard him.
No. Played for a club called Piast Gilvic, and weirdly then went to their second team on loan before finishing up his career at Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
I thought he would have finished up at Real or something like that.
Yeah, the run he was on. Best known, really, for his time at Fulham, I would say. Played 95 times for them and scored 20 goals.
This is going to be a killer, isn't it, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you he has 2 caps for the Netherlands, although he wasn't born in the Netherlands. He was born in Liberia.
No.
He is a striker.
Yeah.
Jesus, what else can I tell you? What else can I tell you?
Give us an 8 at time.
He played for Fulham between 2004 and 2009, but it was like 2004 to 2007 was kind of his main time there, because then he started going off on loan a lot.
Yeah.
Nobody?
No.
All right. It was Collins John. Collins John. Not to be confused with his teammate for a while, Stern. John Collins, of course.
Or Stern John,
yeah. Right then, let's move on. Our next player began his career at Portsmouth. This one's going to be hard again. Danny?
Crouch started at Portsmouth.
It's not Peter Crouch, no. He went to Swindon Town then.
Danny. Jan Agerfjordhoff.
No, went back to Portsmouth before going to Brentford. Played for them 152 times, scoring 28 goals. Went from there then back to Swindon Town. Played for them a further 87 times before going on to Stoke City.
Danny. Ricardo Fuller.
Not Ricardo Fuller, no. Went from Stoke to Leeds.
Cullum.
Danny
Mills.
Not Danny Mills, no. Only played for Leeds 20 times, but scored once for them, and then went to Luton.
I take it he's not going to move back up to leagues after his time at Luton, is he, Sam?
He kind of did. He went to Sheffield United and actually to Borough while he was with Luton. That was in 1993. So,
Kingsley Black.
No, and his final 3 clubs, I'll zip through these, were Sheffield United, Bradford City. And then I can tell you, he played for Bradford City between 1994 and 1995. And then, in 2012, he played 2 appearances for Welshpool Town, wherever the fuck they are.
Jeez, you're making it difficult for this week, Sam.
I'm pulling him out. He was a midfielder. He is English.
Any caps?
Don't think so. Let me see.
Well, no. He got a B cap back in the day, didn't he?
No caps. I can give you a big clue. He's probably more famous for his, I would say he's definitely, in fact, more famous for his post-football career than his football career. He's very famous as a television personality, presenter and reporter.
Danny.
Chris Kamara.
It's Chris Kamara. Very good.
Take it out of that. Take it, Chrissy. Oh, yeah, buddy.
Scores in the doors again. I think that's 3, is it?
Yeah, Danny won.
Danny's won is grand. I had one more. We'll save that for next time. Right, just time for prick of the week then. Peter, who you got?
I'll go with Everton for not scoring against Fulham.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going to go with Joey Barton, just football's ultimate problem child. I'm sure you saw the news. He's under investigation now for, I think, judging by reports, he got in a scuffle with the Barnsley manager Daniel Stendel, and Stendel needs emergency dental treatment. So Jesus. We can kind of, you know, put one and one together and get 2 here and say that Don, you know, either through a headbutt or a punch, Joey's knocked his 2 teeth out. So yeah. you think he, you know, as a manager as well, like, imagine Joey going in and telling the lads, right, keep it calm now, lads, you're going to come flying out. But, like, yeah, like, just grow up, Johnny, like, Joey. Like, I'm sure they had an argument, but, like, you know, how many times does he need to learn? Like, can't just go around punching the head off people all the time. So, yeah, sorry, Joey. As much as you try to, you know, make us all believe you are some intellectual philosopher or whatever, you're just a fucking scumbag.
Yeah, what a prick. Call him yourself.
I'm going to go for Anthony Knockhart's higher challenge for Brighton against Bournemouth, and they were 2-0 down. It was a lot of things. Cowardly, mistimed, ridiculously dangerous. This is coming from a guy who's been on crutches for the last 5 weeks with an ankle injury from football. So maybe I'm sensitive about bad tackles. But geez, right, it was awful. And it was damning as well because, like, these days, you know, every decision is protested against by all your teammates, the referee and TV. But even the Brighton players put their hands... Glenn Murray put his hand in his head straight away. Shane Duffy said something to Knockhart as he walked off the pitch, and it wasn't nice, put it that way. It wasn't supportive. It was one of the worst tackles I've seen in a long... how he didn't break the guy's leg, I don't know, but it was one of the worst tackles ever.
Yeah, what a prick. And Danny?
Yeah, John Delaney for me, yeah. He's just a rotter. He should never have been going out with your woman in the first place, or married to her. She was way out of his league.
That's the angle you're going at.
Oh, yeah, well, why not? You know, and then he's doing a little bit of switching money from X to Y to Z and switching it back over there. He's a rotter, but he's transformed Irish football. We're reaping the benefits of it now, so... Yeah, he's my prick of the week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Good times are coming, thanks to Big John. Right, that's it. Thanks so much, lads. I'll say thanks to you first. Thanks, Peter.
Cheers, lads. Enjoy that.
Thanks, Colin.
Down.
Cheers, Danny.
Thanks, lads.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back again next week, and make sure to head along to thefootballfaithful.com for lots more great football content. And do subscribe. We're now available on loads and loads of different platforms. We're on every one you can think of where you can listen to stuff, including Spotify. So go on, have a listen to us on there, and we'll see you next time.